Hi, everybody, and welcome to yet another fabulous episode of Sephra's Green and Greener Show. I'm Sephra Abraham, your host, and today my guest is Chandler Precht. She is a climate superstar. She is a director, a professor, and a student at Columbia University. We have so much to learn from her today. Hi, Chandler. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm so good now that you're here. So, without further ado, should we get into it?
Let's get into it.
So, the first question I love asking most, I think all of my guests, is what was your aha moment and what got you into this beautiful work of climate and sustainability?
That's an excellent question. So, I don't think there was like a cinematic aha moment for me. I feel like it was a slow burn, probably started in the womb. My dad is a marine biologist and my family cares greatly about the environment. So I grew up in Miami, around the ocean, in the ocean. And I just saw things declining, coral reefs declining, coastlines dwindling. And overall, it was just the natural beauty of what I grew up with was not really there anymore. So I think that was really it for me. And when I got to undergrad, I, you know, decided to study environmental science. I double majored in Spanish and Latin American cultures, and then I also got a minor in chemistry. So, you know, that all was from me doing research when I was younger in marine science and specifically on coral reefs. And then that really led into what I started doing for my career. And so after undergrad, I went into environmental consulting, and I didn't feel like that was really it for me either. So then I went on, and while I was doing consulting full-time, I went to school part-time, and I started the MS in sustainability science. And now here we are, and I'm doing a different program, and I'm sure we'll get into it.
I really have to ask this. You have been associated with Columbia University in one way or another or multiple for the last like 10 plus years. Take me through that. You must really love this school.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I love Columbia. No, I do. I do. You know, every institution has its issues. And so I'm not saying that it's free of issues, that there haven't been bumps in the road. But yeah, I do love the institution and I love everything that it's given me. And you're right, I've been there for 10 plus years now. So I was there for undergrad, then started my MS in sustainability science there for grad school. After grad school, or actually kind of during grad school, I started working for the Earth Institute, and I've been there ever since. And I'm starting my second master's now, or I just started it. And yeah, it's certainly not where I thought I would be, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
I love that. So I want to get into your teaching, you know, your professor career path, let's say. And that's the most interesting part to me, right? Like you started teaching at the age of young age of 25.
Yeah, it was probably 25, I think.
Oh my God. But you've like managed to inspire, I'm sure, like hundreds of students along the way, right? And I'm sure of that because she's inspired me a lot. So, you know, take me through that. Like what prompted you to be like, okay, I'm studying, I'm this, but now I want to like teach people. How did that happen?
Great question, too. Man, you've got some really good ones. I think, you know, I was in this science career, very STEM, analytical. And when I started over in academia, kind of a career pivot. You know, I think it looks like a career pivot, even though for me, there's always been a through line there. And that is that, you know, I really want people to feel connected to science. And what's a way to do that? You teach them. So that's really what it is for me. It's I was scaling up. So I know that it looks like a career pivot, but I think it's so rewarding to me to be able to really help teach and inspire this next generation of sustainability practitioners and professionals to go on and do this work. So
So what is the name of the course that you teach? Has it been the same since you started out? Has it evolved? Like, what is it?
I teach the Integrative Capstone Workshop, or a section of it. And I don't only teach the Integrative Capstone Workshop, but I actually oversee it as well. So we have students working in groups of 10 to 15 for a real world client, nonprofit or government agency. We only work with those two. And, you know, we try to match these students with these external clients to give them this real world experience. So while the course itself, the name hasn't changed, the topic has changed every semester that I've taught it.
And, you know, you get this firsthand experience with so many fresh young minds, right, with new ideas. But along the way, have you come across any one particular topic that your students just cannot wrap their minds around, like anything like that?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I don't think that there's a topic that they can't really wrap their heads around. But I think one part of the course that's really difficult is how stressful it is, because it's a one semester course. You're working with an external client. You're being expected to kind of apply everything that you've learned throughout your graduate program and throughout the curriculum onto this project. And while doing that, you're also having to navigate group dynamics. You're having to compromise on things that maybe you don't want to compromise on. You also maybe don't have the perfect information or data, so you need to take that into account. And so I think it's a really stressful time for students, but it's also the perfect time while they're in school to practice those things and practice being on a team, practice putting their skills into practice. Practice into practice, you know? Because then when they get into the real world, they're set. So I think that that would probably be a difficult area for them. It's just, you know, how quickly it all unfolds. Aside from, like, capstone being super stressful, and, you know, I'm talking about my students having to navigate all these different challenges within a semester, I think the other thing that they kind of struggle with is cutting through the fluff and, you know, getting something just like real put out there. So they're obviously incredibly passionate, but sometimes that passion can kind of overtake, right? So one of the biggest things for me is teaching them that it's not just the passion that needs to drive this. You really need to be communicating in clear and actionable terms, and something that a client is gonna lean into, something that the real world can apply. Like, it's great, all this fluff and theory, that's fantastic, and the passion's great. But you really need to channel that energy into actionable and clear recommendations and solutions.
Oh my God, you've touched upon something so important. You know, a lot of the times, like, activism takes, you know, the front seat. And what ends up happening is people, the other people who are not activists end up getting so disillusioned by, you know, some, as they call it, extremist agenda or propaganda or whatever. Like, as we are, you know, in that atmosphere right now. So I think that you've touched upon something that is extremely important and required. So is this capstone project, again, like something that is new, or has it always been the way Columbia teaches its, you know, sustainability practitioners, how to actually be a practitioner?
I think our curriculum for both the MS in Sustainability Management or MS in Sustainability Science, they evolve. So there are tons of courses that come and go depending on the industry and where sustainability is. You know, we really have our finger on the pulse of what's in and what students need to know. But one of the required courses is this capstone workshop that they need to take. And they're expected to take it after they've completed at least one course in every curriculum area for both programs. And and or they take it at the end of their program. So usually I'm getting students at the end of the program when they've already pretty much completed everything else and all of their other degree requirements. But yeah, it's really always been part of our curriculum. That's like really one of the only classes that hasn't really changed, but the topics change.
I love that it is evolving and keeping up with, you know, everything that's happening currently in the world, which is scary. But maybe a broader sort of question in the world of academia, right? Like, you've been in and around it for so long within climate and sustainability. Do you think there is any piece that's missing? Maybe not just for Columbia, but maybe in the broader, you know, academia space, any topic that we can teach better or teach more of to our like young students?
You know, we have the world's top sustainability program, so I don't think anything's missing from our curriculum. But one thing that you can't beat and you can't teach in a classroom is experiential learning. So whether that's through site visits or that's through capstone projects or even fieldwork courses, there's nothing that can really beat that kind of real world experience. So I think that whether it's our, you know, programs or it's other programs, I think that's where I would try to expand opportunities. And actually our MS in sustainability science has started with more experiential learning. We actually had a fieldwork course this past summer in the Cayman Islands on tropical coastal ecosystems. And we're actually doing one in Vietnam this January, and it's gonna be on tropical highland ecosystems. So I think that more programs need to get on board with that and expand their fieldwork offerings. The other thing that I would say is, you know, this stuff is heavy. I think climate and sustainability topics, if you're looking at the data, it's pretty bleak. And it's usually pretty negative. And so I think that it's worth training students to, you know, be optimistic, but also to maintain stamina, because it's really hard emotionally to constantly hear just negative news. So I think that, you know, we really need to train our students from an emotional and social standpoint to really be in it for the long game.
No, I love that. I think that makes complete sense. And maybe you brought me to my next line of questioning, which was about like research work and field work, right? And you rightly mentioned that it is so important, especially in the field that we're in. So does this course have a lot of field work attached to it?
My capstone course?
Yeah.
So it could. I don't think my students have really gone out and done field work with it, but that's not to say they can't. I try to take them though to different sites and on different tours. So pretty much every capstone that's had to do with sports and sustainability, I've pretty much always brought my students to some sort of sporting event so they get to see what it's like to be in a stadium or arena. And, you know, whether they were working on waste in stadiums or biodiversity, you know, they could see all of this stuff in practice.
You nailed it. That's exactly what I was trying to figure. And maybe this is a little off topic, but you've also done a lot of like coral research. So take me through that. How, at what, you know, time in your life did you do that? And what was the outcome of it?
Yeah, so I pretty much have done that or was doing that since I was in middle school. So started doing coral research in middle school and continued that throughout high school. And in college, I kind of switched a bit because there are no coral reefs in New York and I was going to college at Columbia. It's kind of hard to do coral research when you're in a place that doesn't have corals. But I've just always been intrigued by coral and coastal ecosystems. So that's what I did my research in. And, you know, my parents have always pushed me and did push me to pursue a scientific path because I was good at it and I loved it. So
now I think I want to move into, you know, your role as a director at Columbia University. So you are leading the external affairs, right? So can you tell me, how do you frame your climate or sustainability messages without overwhelming people, right? We just spoke about the amount of doom and gloom in the field. So how do you go about that?
Yeah, it's tough. With all the doom and gloom, it's certainly difficult. But I think that leaving people informed and empowered is very important, and not just leaving them alarmed. And that's, you know, if I'm talking to a prospective student that's interested in our sustainability graduate programs, I need to maintain a certain kind of message and rapport with them. Same thing with students in a classroom. I can't just be overwhelming them with science that shows how bad things are. You know, I also have to show them what they can do. And so I think that it really is a matter of giving people not just this doom and gloom, not just the negative, but also showing them what they can do so that they do feel empowered and inspired. And, you know, I feel that way about Climate Week. You know, I feel like there's so much positive and good that comes out of Climate Week because, yes, you're hearing about, obviously, how bad things are with the climate or the environment, but it also is showing what people are doing and what actions people are taking and what actions can be done. So I think that that is a really powerful part of communications, and part of my role is to storytell. And so I think that that's really how you have to do it. You have to inform, but also empower, and not just alarm people.
Again, great answer. And maybe I want to touch upon the fact that you've been in like three big sectors, right? You've been in consulting, you've been in academia, and you've been in research, right? If you can, I don't know how you're going to do it, but if you can, you know, give me an idea about how does each sector influence the climate conversation differently?
There are certainly three buckets here, and certainly three different languages that are being spoken. So academia, that's where knowledge is being built. Then there's consulting, where there's a more applicable or application-based language or, you know, framework to it. And then there's research that kind of gives you the evidence that you need to make solutions or be able to apply it in the real world. So I think that those three buckets could all theoretically collide. So I feel like I'm a translator. So I use all three because I feel like each of them alone isn't going to do the job, right? So I feel like my role is to kind of be able to translate the science using all my backgrounds and make sure that the evidence, the data, all of that isn't lost in a PowerPoint deck or in a policy memo.
So, you know, if someone had to look at Chandler, you know, as a director at Columbia University and be like, I want that for myself, what kind of maybe, you know, career path would you recommend for them so that they can follow in your footsteps?
Okay, to be a director at Columbia, I think it's, I hate when people say this, but it's networking. I hate when people say it, but it's so true. It's about who you know, 1,000%. It is who you know, and it also is timing, I think. Like, did I ever think that I'd be in the position that I'm in at this age doing what I'm doing? No, absolutely not. No way. But it's, I knew somebody, and while I was doing my grad program, I got a job at the Earth Institute. And then one thing led to another, and, you know, people saw that I was working really hard. That's another thing. You've really got to hustle. You've really got to hustle, especially if you're a woman. You've got to hustle. I'm sorry. Because I had to hustle, and I know what it's like. People will... It's tough to be a woman in the industry. And we can get into that. But, yeah, I think it's just you've got to work really hard, and it's a right time, right place. So I knew somebody, and then things just worked out. People were leaving, and I was finishing up my first grad program, and they offered me an associate director position, and I thought that after I finished my sustainability science degree, I would go on and work in corporate sustainability, you know? But I was like, you know, this is an offer that I really can't turn down. So I did it. And, you know, then after about, I think it was like a year and a half, I got promoted to director. So I think it's, sometimes it's luck. Sometimes it's luck. I know that's not great advice, but it's really the networking, taking opportunities when they come, and rolling with the punches.
Wow. I hope everyone's really absorbed what Chandler has just given us, which is words of wisdom. I love that. So, you know, we've covered your professor, your director journey. Now getting into the fact that you've become a student again. Chandler, does your quest for knowledge never end? How are you this fabulous? So tell me about what course you're pursuing now and what got you into it. Why are you doing this?
Great question. So I am now doing the MS in sports management at Columbia. I never leave. It's going to take a lot for them to get rid of me. I'm a lifer. But I've wanted to really get into this for a while. I've, you know, been thinking about merging my two passions of sports and sustainability since at least 2022. I went to this Soccer in a Warming World event at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, and Sam Mewis, who's now a retired U.S. women's national team player, was there and speaking, and just the stars aligned, and I was like, wow. And it was like an epiphany that I had, like, this is what I could be doing for the rest of my life, is merging these two passions. And I've always thought of them as two completely separate things, but they actually go hand in hand, I think. So, you know, I've been thinking about it and finally did it after some time. But yeah, and here we are. And I think that sports have this power that other industries don't have, especially to make change. And, you know, it's based on the Global Sports Insights. The sports industry is ranked 9th in the world in terms of full economic value, and that's ahead of oil and gas. So the full economic value of the sports industry is $2.65 trillion, which is massive. So it's just an economic powerhouse. That's number one. Number two, it has this rare cultural power that I don't think any other industry has. And it really has the power to connect with people, connect with fans emotionally. So people might not have read a climate report. They might have not read the IPCC. But if, you know, a sports team is going to implement net zero or commit to net zero, or they're a fan's favorite athlete is talking about clean water, that message is going to hit completely differently. So I've just been so enthralled by this idea that blending these two could really make some impactful change.
Yeah, oh my God, you've totally opened this part of my brain that I have, you know, repressed a little bit, because when I got to the US and I heard people talking about sports, I'm like, oh my God, where am I? People are so passionate. It goes down to like the district, regional, I don't know, like if you're living in a town, like that town has a representation within sport. And I think you're absolutely right. It is a cultural powerhouse to the next level, which brings me to ask you, like, you know, you said you wanted to merge sport and, you know, your passion for climate. What role do you see sports having in that climate conversation today?
Yeah, so I just feel like sports have just this powerful role in normalizing things. So they have a role in normalizing things like sustainable actions or sustainability at scale too. So it's not just, you know, in one local, you know, space. I think that sports have the power to connect with these global audiences and, yeah, normalize sustainability and normalize sustainable actions.
That is so interesting that you say that. And it prompts me to ask, is there an initiative or something, you know, mind-boggling you've come across recently that one of your favorite sports teams or any other sports team has, like, you know, enacted within climate and sustainability?
You know, this is crazy because it's actually not something like mind-blowing, but it's something that I think has a huge impact. And my students actually did a whole capstone project on it, and that is switching from single use to reuse. So think of a beer cup or a soda bottle. You know, those things are single use at stadiums for the most part. And you just, at the end of a game, you look and the trash cans are just piling over, and there's so much trash that's accumulated at the end of sporting events. So, you know, I think that one of the best ways to actually reduce the amount of waste you have and your carbon footprint is to start implementing reuse in your stadium. You know, make people return it at the end of the night or when they're done with it, and then get a different one, and then you wash them and they enter the cycle again. So I think I don't think it's like mind blowing, but I think that little change could have so much power for us from a waste and carbon emission standpoint.
So it's so interesting that you say that. Is there a recent example that you can give me of a sporting venue or a sporting team implementing a really cool climate or sustainability initiative?
Totally. I think one great example is CPKC Stadium in Kansas City. I mean, that's where the Kansas City Current from the NWSL play, and they're doing a great job at, you know, implementing reuse in their stadium. Because really, what's great about them is they started with reuse from the time they opened. So from the moment they opened, they had reuse in their stadium. And I think going forward, if a lot of stadiums are actually going to start being built, I mean, Nissan Stadium in Tennessee, where the Tennessee Titans play, they're, you know, building a whole new one that'll open in 2027, I believe. I think that these stadiums should start doing this from the get-go. I don't think they should start with single use. I think they really need to start with reuse. And CPKC is a great example of that. They did it and it's working really well.
So can you give me any other example of a sporting team that has, you know, taken on an initiative within the climate/sustainability space where they've seen long-term cost savings?
So there are plenty of stadiums, teams, leagues that have implemented sustainability initiatives that have cut costs. A lot of them will not outright say what their cost savings are. But you take Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, they are on 100% renewable energy. They have on-site solar. There are obviously cost savings there. And I don't think people really think about that. Like, you really do save when you start using renewable energy or when you are producing your own energy on site.
Okay, you've given us some great examples. Let's get a little creative here, right? So if you could design your ultimate sustainability initiative for a sporting organization, what would it be?
So I came up with an idea in 2022. I was at this stakeholder challenge dinner with the Advanced Energy Group, and it was about clean transportation. And the idea that I came up with, and this is the first time that I really started voicing my ideas around sports and sustainability, was at this dinner. And I came up with this proposal, if you will, to kind of transform Yankee Stadium into an electric vehicle charging hub. And everybody at my table was all over it. And I was like scribbling all of these notes on this menu that they had and whatever. But yeah, I think that although that would take a long time to implement, you know, there's a timeline for all sustainability initiatives, and it would take a lot of capital. I do think it would be really cool for a stadium to serve as some sort of EV charging hub or some other kind of sustainability-related hub. That's the initiative that I came up with way back.
You know, again, the sport into sustainability intersection is so interesting. And is there anything that, you know, the sustainability world can learn from the sporting culture, you know, that we spoke about just now?
Yes, teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work. I believe it. I really think that it's going to take everybody working together on this. I said this when I was moderating a Climate Week event this year. I said, you have to show up every single day like it's game day. And athletes do this all the time. Teams do this all the time, where they show up to practice not knowing that they're going to win the game or not knowing they're going to win a trophy or a medal. They show up anyway because it's what they love doing. And so I think that that's what we need to continue doing. And we've got to keep showing up, and you do it as a team. And I think that playing for the planet or protecting the planet is the ultimate team sport. If there's been ever a team sport, it is protecting our planet.
I love that. And I think maybe one of the questions that I was dying to ask you before, actually, I'm just going to ask you now, because you've been so heavily involved in the sporting world here. Can you give me your favorite sports people?
All right, so Alex Morgan, come on. Lynn Williams, you have Mia Hamm, who's now retired, but I mean, trailblazer, that one. Trinity Rodman, there are so many, so many.
Ah, I love that you have so many, you know, women on your favorite athletes. And that brings me to the question, can you tell me a little bit about the growing, you know, women's sports in the US today?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's, I feel like it grows every day. I mean, viewership is up more than it ever has been. Media rights deals are up. There are more fans than there have ever been, you know, getting on board with women's sports or finally watching. You know, it's taken them long enough. But yeah, it's absolutely growing. And I don't even think that it's hit its peak. I think that it still is going to keep growing. And I think we're going to be seeing it for a while, and I think we could surpass some of the men's sports.
I can't wait for that to happen. Oh my God. It's like one of my dreams to see that happen and to see that the United States has really pushed and, you know, seen actual progress in that. Just warms my, you know, my younger heart, if you will, because I grew up not having too much, you know, representation or not knowing who to look up to like inspire me to continue playing. So it was always the male athletes. But to hear this from you today is amazing. So, you know, that makes me want to ask you one more question is, you've had so many students in the last 4 years of you doing this. What is something that you think you have learned from your years of teaching, you know, your students?
I'm going to cry. I learned so much from them. It's crazy. I actually say that I feel like I learn more from them than they learn from me, because they come in with all this creativity and energy that is just so inspiring. And, you know, it's funny, whenever we start a capstone project or I start a semester and I introduce the project, I always have one way of going about an issue or kind of solving a problem. So I have this one kind of methodology, right? Whatever problem it is or whatever, you know, we're working on, I always go into the semester thinking one thing. This happens every semester. Always go in thinking one thing. And by the end of the semester, I'm just like blown away by their creativity and how all of these diverse perspectives and voices can really come together to do something way better than like what I had formulated. So I think that that's something that I've learned, and it's reinforced every semester, is that there's not just one right way of doing something. There's not one solution to a problem. There are so many ways that you can go about solving different challenges that you have, whether they're sustainability related or not. It's a matter of listening to the people around you. And I think this also plays into teamwork, in that it takes a team, it takes a village. It's not just gonna be one person or one organization or even one industry, right? Like, I love the sports industry, and I've told you, you know, how impactful they are, how powerful they are economically, culturally, but it's not just gonna be the sports industry. It's gotta be every single industry getting on board with this.
Okay, so this brings me to the, you know, absolute words of wisdom that I know that you have. So in the 10 plus years that you've been in and around this space, what are some of the lessons learned that you want to impart to our audience, and especially, you know, young women that are listening in?
I feel like my answer to this is going to be 5 minutes long. So before I was talking about this dinner that I had gone to, or this event, this stakeholder challenge, where I introduced an idea back in 2022, and I was talking about how I scribbled on the menu or whatever. Well, you know, at that dinner, somebody at my table, again, everybody at my table was super impressed by this idea. Everybody was on board. It actually won the stakeholder challenge that night, because we had to present it in front of all the other tables. Yeah. At the end of the night, somebody at my table wanted the menu that I had written all of these notes on. And so this man takes this menu, because my idea is just so great. And, you know, I didn't think twice. And I, at the time, again, this is many years ago, at the time, I think I was just okay with it, because I thought, okay, these people are impressed by my ideas, or they would never use this in any other way, right? Like, they wouldn't take credit for my work. No, they wouldn't take credit for my ideas. Absolutely not. And so I saw these men, older than I am, been in the industry much longer than I have been, and very well connected. Everybody seems to love them. And I kept joining them at events, and I kept sharing ideas with them. And, you know, over time, that changed and that shifted. And soon enough, any idea that I had been, and that I had shared with them, had been repackaged into somebody else's ideas. Whether that's from, you know, a work idea or a work initiative to a panel, right? Like, anything that I had ever shared with one person or multiple people that I trusted, and they happened to be men, they were all of my ideas were taken and repackaged as somebody else's. And so I think that the biggest piece of advice for anybody, but especially young women, is always take credit for your work. I think that there's so much power in using I built this, I designed this, that was my idea. I really think that women need to be okay using their voice. And we've been taught from the time we were kids to not, you know, speak out, or to not come across as bossy or rude.
Or too much.
They don't call men that. So, you know, I was so wrong in thinking that somebody wouldn't do something like that to me, or that some people wouldn't do something like that to me, but they did. And so it's really important to, like I said, take credit for your work, take credit for your wins, document it, post it. It's not, how do I put this? It's not bragging, it's stuff that you've done. And the other thing that I'll add to this is, it's okay to not be liked. Not everybody's gonna like you. And it's okay if not everybody's cheering for you. That's fine. you're not doing the work to be liked. You're doing the work to make an impact. So I think that that has really been a learning experience for me, is that it's okay that not everybody likes you, because you don't like everybody. And, you know, I think reputation beats likability, and I think receipts beat the rumors.
Oh my God, is that the title of your next record, man? Wow. That was incredible. I hope, you know, all the young people, young women especially listening in, take note of what Chandler has just shared, because that was intense and I felt it. I can't imagine, you know, that you had to go through that, but you're here and you're killing it. So I know that your advice was just spot on. Thank you, Chandler. So I think that sort of brings us to the end of this awesome podcast. Thank you so much, Chandler, for sharing your thoughts. This has been so incredible, and it's so nice having like-minded people in sustainability and climate to connect with. And Chandler has been one of those voices in my life in New York. So thank you again, Chandler. And I hope you enjoyed being here today.
Oh, I did. Thank you for having me.